There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's turn our attention to our top news story this hour. And new research has found that Abu Dhabi is home to the world's largest observed population of a rare species of dolphin. Mohammed Suleiman from the ARN News Centre is in the studio to tell us a little more about that. Hello, Mohammed.
Hello, Claire. How are you?
I love this story because often we get environmental stories from this part of the world that are kind of negative, let's be honest. And this is a really positive one. So tell us about the findings of this new study.
Right. So this was a joint study between the Environment Agency Abu Dhabi and the Bottlenose Dolphin Research Institute, which is based in Spain. And they basically work together to find out what species of dolphins are in Abu Dhabi's waters and how many of them are there. And what they found is that there are a surprisingly large number of Indian Ocean humpback dolphins in the capital's water. The researchers estimate that there are more than 700 of these rare dolphins in the capital, and that easily makes it the largest population of humpback dolphins in the world. They're also found in South Africa and parts of the Indian coast as well, but the maximum population that has been recorded there is only around 200, so there are way more in Abu Dhabi. Now, earlier today, I spoke with Bruno Diaz Lopez, who is the chief biologist and the director of the Bottlenose Dolphin Research Institute. I asked him, what were some of the characteristics that make these dolphins unique?
The main characteristic is their particular hump. These animals, they are physically quite different because the dorsal fin is skewed, but they have very particular humps, and that main characteristic is for that they receive this name, the humpback dolphin. They have this hump and also a very long rostrum, a very long beak that makes them very characteristic and different than the more famous and common bottom dolphins.
So, Mohammed, what is it about the waters of Abu Dhabi that attracts these rare dolphins?
Right, so there are two things which have led to these dolphins taking a liking to Abu Dhabi's waters. The first is the warmth of the water. The dolphins love the fact that it doesn't get too cold at any point of the year in Abu Dhabi. And the second is how shallow the water of Abu Dhabi's coastline is. Now, we know that these dolphins usually live within 3 kilometers from the shore, and they prefer to swim in water that is less than 25 meters deep. So Abu Dhabi's coastline really is the perfect environment for them, but it's precisely this preference that makes them vulnerable. So to find out more, I spoke with Edwin Grancourt, who is the head of marine assessment at Environment Agency Abu Dhabi. He explained to me why Abu Dhabi's humpback dolphins need to be looked after.
It's very threatened because its habitat is limited to the shallow coastal areas and channels around the mainland and islands of Abu Dhabi. And this coincides with areas where there's a lot of activity. A lot of coastal development occurs here, a lot of dredging. There's a lot of noise from marine traffic and a lot of high-speed power boats and also fishing activity, which threaten these animals. So our survey provided a lot of information that was very useful for conservation management planning so that we can implement actions to make sure that these animals are protected and conserved for future generations.
He mentions there, Mohammed, that a large part of the study is focusing on conservation. What needs to be done to protect? Now that we know they're there, how do we look after them?
Right, so their sightings also showed that there was clear evidence of threats to these animals caused by human activity. The researchers found that up to 12% of the dolphins they spotted had some kind of damage on their dorsal fins. Here's Edwin Grancourt from Environment Agency Abu Dhabi once again explaining what kinds of injuries they observed on the dolphins.
One of the most common injuries were parallel scars. And these were often in the tail, around the tail of the dolphin, and then around the dorsal region. And in some cases, the dorsal fin had actually been removed. And we consider that those injuries are derived from propellers. The second common type of injury is a straight cut wound around the dorsal fin, where the dolphins actually appear to have been entangled in fishing net, and then that through the drag as the dolphin swimming through the water is cut into their flesh. And we've actually observed some dolphins that have been entangled in ropes, and actually they've been stuck on their body, and they've as they've grown, those ropes have dug into their body. So collisions with vessels and propellers and entanglement in fishing gear are the main threat.
That was Edwin Grancourt from the Environment Agency Abu Dhabi explaining the nature of injuries they've observed on these beautiful creatures. I also asked him where their team of researchers will go from here to protect the dolphins. Here's what he told me.
We need to continue the survey so we determine the hotspots. And then once we've found those out, we need to understand what activities are happening in those areas. And the types of management actions that we can implement are things like limiting net fishing activities in the hotspots, limiting vessel speeds, and trying to implement actions that conserve the habitat of those areas. And the hotspots could be areas that are important for feeding grounds or calving, and areas where calving and mating occur.
Now, I've been lucky enough to spot these particular species of dolphin off the coast of Dubai. I was out paddleboarding, but Emma Brain joins us in the studio now, and you've actually been even closer to them. Well, I mean, I was pretty close, but only to a couple of them, and you actually got in the water with them.
We did. This was actually 6 years ago, and we used to go wakeboarding in the channels around the mangroves in Abu Dhabi, and I was just hanging out the back of the boat on my board, and one of these dolphins popped up next to me, because, of course, they love to play in the bow waves, popped up next to me, and I was like, oh my goodness. So we just stopped the boat immediately and just hung out, and there was a school of about 10 of them, and they were just coming up to the boat and really close, and we were just sat in the water letting these dolphins swim around us, and I've got some fantastic photos, and they were absolutely playing up for the camera. I've got some fantastic pictures of one of them literally on its back, beak wide open, smiling with its pectoral fins flapping as if it's waving. Fantastic, really, really amazing to see.
Do you think that there's, you know, there's not enough kind of separation between the water sports that we love to enjoy and kind of the natural habitat of these animals? You know, they're mentioning these, that they're getting injured and that kind of thing. Do you think that we need to be more aware of that?
Definitely. I mean, I had no clue that these creatures were there. So it was a complete shock to us to see them. Once you know that they're there, I think there does absolutely need to be some sort of separation. You need to stop motorboats going down there, because obviously they get damaged and injured through from the propellers and the fishing lines and the boat ropes and all the rest of it. So really, it needs to be conservation areas, and they need to be left alone to be there. And, you know, let people go and see them and photograph them, because it's amazing to see these creatures in the wild, and it's an absolute privilege, 100%. But yes, we need to protect them.
It's very special when you do see them and you get close to them.
Amazing.
There's something quite incredible about it.
Yeah, we've actually posted the pictures that Emma sent us on our Air and News Center app, so you can check them out there. But the other thing that I wanted to also talk about was that these dolphins have a very specific role to play in the ecosystem, right? They're not just there just for fun.
Just photo opportunities.
Exactly, yeah. although they do make good photo opportunities as well. But when I was speaking with Edwin Grandcourt from the Environment Agency Abu Dhabi earlier today, he explained to me why dolphins are important to the ecosystem and also what message he'd like to give to marine vessels that operate close to these dolphins.
Dolphins in particular are really good indicators of marine environmental quality, because they bioaccumulate marine toxins. They're important components of our marine biodiversity as apex predators. They're pleasant to see in the wild, and they have an important ecological function. And the message that I would give to marine vessel operators is keep an eye out and try to maintain a sensible speed. And if you see a dolphin, keep away from it and at all times, and drive slowly in the presence of dolphins.
Well, it's a really special story, Mohammed, to bring to us today. I just feel like we don't hear enough of positive stories about all the amazing wildlife that is here. And Emma, I know you're a big wildlife fan, so there's a lot out there, isn't there?
There is, and sometimes we forget with the construction and how fast the UAE is growing urban-wise, and with all the skyscrapers and everything, we kind of forget to stop and take a look around us at the wildlife that lives around us, and we should, because it's amazing.
Which would help us to really appreciate these incredible creatures and to help to conserve them. But you've also swum with dolphins, Claire. It's an amazing thing.
You know, I didn't get in the water with them. I stayed on my paddleboard. But I sat on the paddleboard, which, you know, you're pretty close. And anyway, you're sort of sitting. There's no motor, obviously. You're sat on a paddleboard. And yeah, they just kind of played around, as Emma described. You know, they tend to be very curious animals anyway, dolphins. And they kind of want to check you out as well. And they kind of come up, don't they, for a little look at you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm unfortunately, that doesn't always that's not always a good thing for them, because not all humans are out to look after them.
They're also supposed to be therapeutic, right? I think autistic kids have been, once they swim with dolphins, they see an improvement in their behavior and stuff like that as well. So dolphins are very special.
I think they are calming, yeah. Calming animals, that's true. And I think you're right, you can swim with them for that reason. But yeah, lovely story. Thank you, Mohammed. Top line again for us?
More than 700 of these very rare species of dolphins in Abu Dhabi. They're still taking steps to conserve these dolphins and make sure that they don't become extinct quickly.
Okay, thanks very much. Mohammed Suleiman there and Emma Brain from the ARN News Centre. And Sally, I guess I'd like to know from people this evening what wonderful wildlife of the UAE they've spotted here out
Definitely.
And about. Because you can see a lot out on your walking your dog or at your evening walk. There's hoopoes in the car park.
Yeah.
Who knew?
There are. There are, you know, everything from the birds and from, you know, I don't even remember the name of the specific type of gazelle that you can find here, but there are all kinds of wildlife that you can see, whether it's on land, sea, everywhere. But just let us know if you've got any special experiences.
Yeah,
we'd love for you to share them.
What have you spotted?
This is Drive Live
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Drive Live, Claire and Sally with you this evening, and messages already coming in on your wildlife experiences here in the UAE. We just heard all about the big population of humpback dolphins that have been studied in the waters of Abu Dhabi. We've got the world's largest population, which seemed to surprise the scientists, and it's good news for us, of course. Majdi, Sally says, I came close to a bull shark, jaws wide open in Fujairah while snorkeling a couple of years ago. Well, that... I don't know about that. That sounds quite scary.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, coming close to nature, clearly, Majdi, you made it. And it sounds like it wasn't anything painful.
I've seen sharks in Fujairah, but much smaller ones, little black tip reef sharks. And
I wonder if
they're
this
not
is
so scary.
Something like that, something that is a bit smaller. Majdi, if you can message us and tell us what that was like, maybe what you learned from the experience, we would love to know. So please do text us back, and anybody else who's got... similar experiences with wildlife in the UAE.
Lots of turtles as well over at Fujairah if you go snorkeling or diving. Absolutely lovely. And you can also see lots of birds on the golf course, Mohammed was just saying before
yes.
we left.
So including peacocks.
Exactly. Your wildlife spotting experiences on 4001, please share them with us. Okay, now Friday's Torch Tower fire in the marina dominated headlines, of course, at the beginning of the week. Striking images of the tower engulfed in flames had everyone wondering just how nobody was injured in the blaze. But nobody was. Everyone was evacuated safely. But despite that, 38 apartments suffered damage in the fire. And of course, that means many residents with lost or damaged possessions that now need replacing. Cue the discussions, of course, about home contents insurance. Recent stats showing that only 7 out of 10 of us still don't have any coverage of our contents, and that can leave us exposed. Joining us now on the line is Emre Gutchlu, who's head of insurance at Service Market. Good afternoon to you, Emre.
Oh, hi, hello. Good afternoon.
You guys, of course, specialise in home insurance, and we've got you on because you've seen a 500% increase in home insurance sales inquiries since Friday, so since that fire. That is a remarkable figure. Talk us through what you've seen.
Yes, absolutely. So we have actually seen since Friday that the number of requests we got for home insurance where people were looking to buy home insurance were about 8 times as much as we typically get in a week. And the number of people that have bought home insurance were about 5 times as much. Now, we have been offering online comparison and sales for home insurance on Service Market for the last 3 years, and we have seen these spikes in the past every time there was a fire. Now, when I talk to my friends and my colleagues, they realize that home fires are a real risk, and you know, other things that can happen to your home, flooding maybe, is something that they should be protected against. But for some reason, it still tends to take something rather dramatic like the fire and the torch to happen before people actually go ahead and buy the insurance. Okay. And of course, it should be the other way around. It should be that people think in advance about these risks and have themselves covered before something happens.
We're going to come to the whys, Emma, in a minute. I just want to also ask you about car insurance, because a lot of cars were damaged as a result of the fire, debris falling off the building and such, and you've also seen an increase in car insurance inquiries.
Not necessarily. So we think, interestingly, when it comes to their car, people sort of seem to be more aware of the risk, so they expect the car to crash or even be damaged in a situation like what we had with the Torch fire. When it comes to their home possessions, even though the value at risk is similar, people tend to think less about it. So we haven't really seen a spike in sales in car insurance, but we did see that for home insurance. It seems to take an event like that to really remind people of their risk to their personal belongings and their home contents.
Emery, why do you think it takes a major event like the fire that we saw on the weekend for people to start thinking about home contents insurance? Shouldn't they just be doing it anyway?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think it's to a certain degree, it's psychological. We don't want to think about things that could go wrong in our home. Maybe in with your car, you're in traffic, you see traffic accidents, every month or so, you are more reminded of it. But when it comes to our home where we live, we maybe psychologically there's a bit of a barrier to think about it. Now, we wanted to dig into it more, and we did a survey actually last year, end of last year, with about 1,500 residents in Dubai or in the UAE in general. And we found a few very interesting things. We found that 42% of people said they didn't buy home insurance because they were only renting the apartment. Now, that's a very common misconception. So, of course, there's no point in, if you don't own the apartment or villa that you live in, there's no point in insuring the structure. However, it does make sense to insure what is in the home. And interestingly, when you let people do the exercise and they add up the value of everything that is in their home and that they typically carry around with them, it tends to exceed the value of their car. So there's definitely, quite a bit of risk, a financial risk involved in these kind of incidents. And people don't necessarily realize because of misconceptions and because of, maybe not realizing how much their home content is really worth.
Is it, do people think that this costs too much? Do they think that the insurance is going to be costing more than they can actually afford?
Yes, that was also one of our findings when we did the survey. So 27% of people said that the cost is too expensive. Now, this is not really accurate from our perspective because if you go to service market and you search for insurance, home insurance policies, you will see that the cheapest one costs about 200 dirhams. And if you have more expensive, even if you want your more expensive watch or handbag or similar items to be covered, and you have more expensive furniture at home, you will be typically at 500, maybe 600 dirhams per year. So the cost of that is actually very low compared to the risk that you have. And when you look at home fires, for example, which are not even the most common cause of damages, but there were about 200 home fires in Dubai in the last year alone. So it is a real risk, and I think people overestimate the cost of home insurance. They maybe underestimate the benefits of it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Thank you very much, Emre, for coming on this afternoon. That's Emre Gutchalou there and talking about a spike in the amount of people inquiring about home insurance at Service Market, his company. He's head of insurance there since that Torch fire on Friday. And Sally, very quickly, it takes a dramatic incident like that to make people suddenly think about it. That's a shame, really.
It reminds you that unfortunately, to wait for a big incident to happen, it does remind you, and you just think, oh, this is the time. It's about time to take out that contents insurance.
Somebody who I reckon's definitely got contents insurance at his home is Nick Rago. He's just walked in the studio a little early for his tech clinic slot. He'll be on after 5 o'clock, but he's setting up some what I can only assume is costly equipment. So I imagine if there was a fire in his apartment, it would cost a lot to replace. Some messages also coming in, Sally, on the wildlife that has been spotted.
I love this one. I decided to take a shortcut on my way to work, but then a camel decided to take a nap in the middle of the road, and it was a very small road, and I got to work late because of it.
That's from Cool Dude. Thank you for that. I like this one as well. Colin says you can see foxes, hedgehogs and grouse in a rack. I guess that probably he means there. And Spencer says, don't you think the marine wildlife has decreased since the Palm and the World have been built? I mean, I'm sure there have been studies on the fact that any human activity disrupts wildlife, right?
Majesty has texted us back saying on the story that he had before about the bull shark, he said he was snorkeling at Snoopy Island, Dibbafajera, with his dad, who tried at one point to touch a coral reef. He got a small injury, and 5 minutes later, I look at my left and here you go, a bull shark moving very slowly. Tried to tell a couple of people who were swimming ahead of me, but put back my head in the water, and the shark seems to have passed behind me to the right side. Unbelievable.
I wonder how he knew it was a bull shark. I mean, they're massive. But it does, you know, I would say, teach you a lesson. Don't touch coral, because it kills it when you touch it.
Yeah,
you don't
want
to cut
it.
Your finger, because you're right, the shark will smell blood. He says he tried to follow it, but it swam very quickly.
I had a GoPro.
It was bigger than the usual black-tip reef shark that you encounter there. Very exciting experience, though.
This is Drive Live
on Dubai I 103.8.
Claire and Sally with you this evening on Drive Live through until 7 o'clock, of course. We've been talking about spotting local wildlife after that report on the dolphin population in Abu Dhabi. Jane says, I was on a walk one morning and heard a rustle under a bush. It was a very cute native hedgehog. Few people send hedgehogs this evening, Sally.
Do you know what I've seen in my own backyard, and I love when it's the season that they come? The woodpeckers. Have you seen these?
No, you've had a woodpecker here.
Oh, my
How
goodness.
Fabulous.
They are so beautiful, and they just come to feed and you know, have lunch in the grass or whatever, and they are stunning.
There are amazing birds here, actually, more than you might think, and I always, when I'm doing the early morning dog walk, see quite a lot of lovely birds here. Bright green bee eaters, they're my favourite. So kitten coming in 4001. I can't tell you what is happening in the studio here.
I didn't realise it was this involved, Claire.
Yeah, this is for our virtual reality experiment coming up in about half an hour with Nick Rago on our tech clinic, of course. And Sally, I mean, there's all sorts of cameras pointing at us. I feel like we're about to shoot some sort of strange movie.
I thought you just put on these goggles and stuff
and
happens.
Away you go.
And Nick is rolling his eyes going,
yeah, that was a major eye roll.
No idea what you're talking about or what you're about to experience. So from 5 o'clock, we will all be clued in because we have no idea what's going on.
Stay
you
with
do.
Us.
You do. Because
well, I sort of do because my husband has an Oculus, so I've seen this kind of thing. His office suddenly became a virtual reality suite, is what we're now to call it. So I do recognise some of the equipment, but still, it's quite fun to have it in the studio, isn't it?
Yeah.
All that coming up, of course. But now let's talk about some of the news stories that are around. And an RTA official has explained why they are cracking down on minor violations on the city's public transport. They say that these offences can lead to serious security concerns. For example, sleeping at bus shelters is not allowed under any circumstances, because this is where some people are staying in the country, illegally camp out. So apparently there's been people illegally sleeping over in a bus shelter. Not good, they say. Abdullah Al-Mahri is the Director of Transport Activities and Monitoring at the RTA's Public Transport Agency. Here's what he told us earlier.
For the sleeping, there is many complaint on it. For sleeping, we don't mean, for example, people who take small naps, such as like 20 minutes or whatever, yeah, this kind of thing. In our case, actually, we found people who is immigrant illegal, and they came and sleep in certain area. One of them, it is bus shelter. So in bus shelter, we notice people, some people, they sleep like more than 6 hours. And this is what we found. We found those people, they don't have a valid visa or expired visa.
That's Abdullah Al-Mahri there, the Director of Transport Activities and Monitoring at the RTA's Public Transport Agency, talking about how some people, often they're here illegally, are sleeping rough in bus shelters.
Something that we were talking about yesterday, we did mention this, Montagi. It's a new portal, but we've got more details on it today. It's really interesting. So Dubai Municipality's new portal, Montagi, is going to tell consumers more about the products that they purchase, including risk factors based on their ingredients. So Montagi will actually rank products such as cosmetics, detergents, health supplements, personal care products, perfume, soaps, packaging materials, and antibacterial products. So the new program requires less documents and eases the process for merchants when they are registering their products as well. So Dr. Naseem Mohammed Abdullah, Head of Consumer Product Safety at Dubai Municipality, explains how the portal will benefit consumers.
For the consumers, the good news is that they can just log into the website and just write down the barcode of the product or any name of the product that they want to know if this product is registered with Dubai Municipality or not, and then they immediately can get it if this is okay, approved product or not. By this, we are involving the community into this type of program, somehow like inspectors, in which if they entered a barcode and they didn't find any data of registration, this means that that product is illegally sold, and by then we will be having a notification and we can send our inspectors to find that premise by which is selling this type of product.
That was Dr. Naseem Mohammed Abdullah. She is the Head of Consumer Product Safety at Dubai Municipality, explaining just how Montagi, this great portal, works, because it's something that is, it can be so innocent. Somebody gifts you some makeup. You know, Zina was telling us about how a friend of hers gifted her some makeup and it turned out to be fake. She opened it and she could smell that it had a strange smell. You know, with a portal like this, you could easily just check if it is registered, if it is a fake product, whatever it is. So brilliant idea.
Very, very useful. Okay, internationally now, US President Donald Trump has upped the ante in the war of words between Washington and North Korea. He's threatening Kim Jong-un with America fire and fury unless the North Korean regime steps back from the nuclear brink. The president's comments have raised a possibility that the US may take unilateral military action in a bid to reverse the progress North Korea has been making in developing a military nuclear capability. Our Washington correspondent Simon Marks has more.
The words were astonishing, and if you saw them written down on a piece of paper, you might have thought they were uttered by Kim Jong-un, not President Donald Trump. But interrupting what he insists is a working holiday in New Jersey, the US president issued a stark warning to North Korea. Back off or prepare to face the consequences.
They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
Quite what the president means by that is not clear. The world, after all, witnessed two nuclear strikes by the United States on Japan at the end of the Second World War, not to mention the kind of scorched earth warfare that pockmarked Vietnam, Bosnia, and more recently Iraq and Afghanistan. But the president's comments, even if they were hyperbole, were the first indication that he is serious about the possibility of taking military action against North Korea. Even though his own Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, said last week that America's options there are limited and do not include the deployment of force north of the 38th parallel. But other voices here, perhaps even voices President Trump is hearing, take a different view. Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters is a military analyst on the president's favorite TV network, Fox News.
I don't want this to be a war. I don't want it. Nobody in their right mind wants it. But we cannot allow North Korea to have an array of missiles, an arsenal of missiles, a nuclear-tipped missiles that can hit the United States. If it comes to that, I would hit them first and hit them hard, knowing that it will be bloody and ugly if we do so.
Those comments and the president's came amid reports that North Korea has now miniaturized a nuclear warhead that could theoretically be mounted on missiles that could in turn theoretically reach US shores. But there are voices here urging calm, and some of them belong to prominent Republicans.
I take exception to the president's comments because you got to be sure that you can do what you say you're going to do.
That's Senator John McCain, who told KTAR Radio in his home state of Arizona that he thinks, as they say in Arizona, that President Trump's comments were all hat and no cattle.
The great leaders that I've seen, they don't threaten unless they are ready to act.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that President Trump is ready to act.
But there's no denying that the war of words between Washington and Pyongyang has at least entered a new, deeply unstable phase. Two world leaders, Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un, each of them deeply unpredictable, each of them apparently relishing confrontation, and possibly each of them now with their fingers on a nuclear button. I'm Simon Marks in Washington for the ARN News Center.
Really interesting piece there from Simon Marks after US President Donald Trump has upped the ante in the war of words between Washington and North Korea.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.